You look lovely, miss. Very good indeed.
I met Mr. Tom at the base of the stairs. I wore jeans and a baggy t-shirt with my hair pulled up into a ponytail. I had a feeling he hadn't even glanced at me, given he was currently tapping a page in a book that looked like a child's diary.
Now, here we go. Let's just... No, Edgar, it is not your turn.
Edgar waited by the front door with a fedora clutched in his spindly fingers, pulled in tight to his chest. He looked like a character out of Oliver Twist asking for more food.
I hear you loud and clear, Sir Tom, but if I may...
He shuffled farther into the entryway.
It's just that the flowers started singing, and when they do that...
No, no.
Mr. Tom held up his hand as he tried to marshal me past Edgar.
It is not your turn. We have to keep things orderly, or it'll all turn into chaos.
Yes, I agree.
Edgar blocked our way now.
But yesterday, you said you would come by, and I waited all day and into the night and looked in the windows when they lit up, watching everyone, and into the darkness when they went out.
Edgar,
and...
for the last time, stop looking in the windows and spying on people. The kids these days call that creepy.
Everyone calls that creepy. After the meeting with Patty, I can...
Oh, no. No, no.
Mr. Tom shook his head adamantly as he put out his arm. He shielded me like I was a celebrity and he my bodyguard, trying to shove me past Edgar.
No. Alpha Steel put me in charge of your schedule, and I mean to uphold that prestigious and somewhat impossible duty.
He didn't actually put you in charge?
You are penciled in later, Edgar. After Aurora's challenge and lunch. The miss is very busy. She has many things to get to, and she doesn't need to be skipping meals so your flowers can sing to her. Now...
But...
Edgar lifted one finger, still clutching the hat.
No buts. Make way. Her mate has made her late for the first meeting of the day. If you keep us here any longer, I'll have to take my anger...
Oh, Jesse!
Patty stuck her head out of the sitting room doorway.
Fantastic, you're here. Just wait until you hear what I have for you today.
She noticed Edgar.
Yes, hello, Edgar. Fine morning, isn't it? I heard you have some trouble with your flowers. What a pity. You've been working so hard. But never mind that now. We'll get to it just as soon as we can, okay?
Edgar lifted his eyebrows at Patty as Mr. Tom continued his attempt to shepherd me past.
No, Tom. You're going about this all wrong.
Patty shouldered Edgar back to make room for herself.
That's not how to manage a schedule. Is this your first time? I know it's difficult when someone is as busy as Jessie, what with her demands and her appointments. No, this is something I'm probably better equipped to handle.
Nope, that's okay.
I stuck out my hand as she took over trying to move me past Edgar.
I think I'm fine.
Unhand her, woman!
Mr. Tom charged back into the fray.
I have it all written down right here in her diary.
He held up the little book. The edge gleamed with a metal clasp that would fit a tiny key.
Along with her daily activities and various thoughts she probably had when doing those activities.
Wait, what? You're keeping an actual diary for me? Like a real diary?
Of course he isn't. That would be bonkers. He's touched, but he's not as bad as the vampire, are you, Mr. Tom? No offense, Edgar, but I think we're all on the same page here, aren't we?
I think maybe.
I'll have you know.
Enough.
The voice was deep, full of power, and the command shocked through those gathered. Tristan walked down the hall, just finishing off a breakfast sandwich. He crumpled the foil in his hand as his glowing gaze traced over Patty and then Mr. Tom.
I will handle Jesse's schedule. Mr. Tom, you already have plenty of very important tasks as it concerns the miss. If all your time is spent managing a diary, we'll have to bring in someone else to see to her day-to-day, like cooking and laundering and cleaning. Someone else will need to handle her.
Mr. Tom pulled his hand away from shoving Patty and brought himself up to his full height.
There is no need to go into such hysterics, Tristan. We all know that I am the most capable person in this house when it comes to looking after the miss.
Exactly. We wouldn't want to have to replace you.
Tristan stopped at my side, darkness swirling around him. His glowing gaze bored into Edgar.
You're already on the schedule for today. Get that hat back to the person you have stashed in your cottage. Free them. And make sure your flowers are seen to until Jesse can visit you.
Yes, sire. Of course, sire.
Edgar bowed, dropped the hat, and spun toward the door. Only it didn't open when he got there, nor did he lift his hand to open it himself. He slammed into the hard surface and bounced back. A glance over his shoulder told him Tristan and his glowing eyes were still pointed his way, and so he spun again and then raced down the hallway toward the back door.
Kind of extreme.
An image of a woman holding her stomach and laughing magically appeared in the wood on the landing.
Not funny.
Ivy House's wheeze of laughter was her reply. Tristan barely spared the dropped hat or dashing vampire a glance. He held out his hand for Mr. Tom.
I'll take the diary, if you please.
Mr. Tom put his nose in the air and surrendered the diary.
It seems like you understand what's important here. Unlike that meddling woman loitering in the doorway of the sitting room.
I'd like a coffee made in the French press, Mr. Tom, and one for Jesse.
Coming right up!
Mr. Tom strode down the hall without another glance at Patty. Tristan's stern demeanor melted into a smile and sparkling eyes.
Patty, lovely to see you.
His charm was off the charts.
If you wouldn't mind stepping into the sitting room for another moment, I need to look over the day's events and confer with Jesse. We're already behind schedule and need to come up with a plan of attack.
Patty blushed.
I would be glad to. Good for you helping her. And just let me say, you've been a wonderful addition to this team. Everything runs so smoothly with you here.
Thank you so much, Patty.
He spared her a moment of attention before turning to me.
Now, Jesse, let's just step into this other sitting room, shall we?
I watched as Patty disappeared through the doorway before following him across the hall.
Privacy, please.
I wrapped us in a soundproof spell, looking at him like I'd never seen him before. He noticed and grinned.
I've had a lot of experience with hard-headed gargoyles and garheads. Sorry about taking over in there, but it seemed like you needed a helping hand.
No, don't apologize. You handled that much better than I could have. You got Mr. Tom off my back without hurting his feelings, and Edgar out of here without him asking to be retired. Where have you been until now?
His mood darkened.
Mistaking where you needed me most.
Our training wasn't going well. He couldn't seem to get in tune with me, and I didn't know enough about his flight plans to figure out where I should be and when. I put my hand on his arm in support.
We'll get it.
He brought that hand up to cough just once before shifting his weight and looking down at the diary. He'd effectively removed my touch. I clasped my hands in front of me.
Sorry.
I'm not worried about the touch, and neither is Alpha Steel. I prefer it, actually. Gargoyles in general do, but you and I both need to practice shifter rules if we want to seem natural in the moment. The packs will notice.
Right, definitely. He turned a page.
Mr. Tom wrote down your heart's desires.
What?
I inched forward to see, putting my hands behind my back. He chuckled at my stance.
That's not really advertising natural.
I pushed my hands to my sides.
None of this is exactly natural for me.
Yes, I've realized that.
He flipped to the most recent page, and his finger traced down the lines before he snapped the diary closed and handed it over to me.
One of your heart's desires is a house in a meadow with a white picket fence and a window box with an apple pie sitting on it.
I looked down at the diary in bewilderment.
A window box has plants and flowers in it.
Usually.
White picket fence. Where did he get that?
I shook my head and handed the diary back to him. Trying to figure it out would make me dizzy.
Not my problem. This is your problem now. You took the job.
He hesitated before closing his fingers around the diary, his expression confused.
I must have gotten it wrong. It seemed like you didn't actually want Mr. Tom taking over your schedule.
I didn't.
Nor Patty.
Correct.
He narrowed his eyes slightly, trying to read me, and then sagged in defeat.
I don't understand.
Yes, I caught that. I thought I was doing fine managing my schedule, but there's a reason Austin asked Mr. Tom to help me. He passed it off as a joke, but clearly I'm not being as punctual as I probably should be. Practice, remember? He was probably trying to protect my feelings, but shifters tend to be incredibly punctual, and I allow meetings and trainings and whatever to run long. I always feel bad cutting someone off, whether it be Edgar explaining his flowers, or Mr. Tom trying to give me one more cup of coffee in the morning to improve my mood, or lengthening training when someone is right on the cusp of getting a maneuver.
You don't like being the bad guy.
I really don't. I've gotten better, but you are clearly very good at handling people, as I've just seen. And you're always hanging around anyway watching. Well, now you get to take an active role. Maybe if you can get me through a day, you can get me through a battle.
You're reaching.
Yeah, I am. But I do think I need help with this, and I really don't want that help from Mr. Tom or Patty. Aurora is busy, Nessa is gone, and besides, I put my hands in my pockets. It was a sign of trust. For shifters, anyway. Practice. You're my flight commander, my beta. It makes sense for you to give commands for me and organize the day-to-day. He nodded slowly.
I did something similar as the lead enforcer for my old cairn, Gimerel. But I didn't manage Nelson's personal life.
Yeah, well, Nelson probably had a personal life. I am the job. It'll be fine. I pulled down the soundproofing spell and started walking toward Patty. It had better be fine, because I cannot have Mr. Tom insulting every person who tries to meet with me. That'll be a nightmare with the shifters. I heard his dark chuckle. Tristan probably wanted to see that. Patty looked up from a magazine when I entered the room. She beamed at me and then Tristan.
All caught up?
She didn't wait for an answer.
Fantastic. Listen to this. Nelson isn't faring well after certain events came to light regarding his mishandling of production cairns. The cairn's finances are down nearly 25%, which is no small number. Then there's the issue of him making people disappear.
Austin and I had acquired a couple of Gimerel's production cairns after Nelson's mishandling came to light, sussed out by Sebastian and Nessa and leaked by Patty. The production cairns were what made Gimerel, the cairn Nelson headed up, money. Without those production cairns, he'd be limping financially, which was what Patty was saying. Making people who stood in his way disappear, though. I barely kept from glancing at Tristan. He'd been the one to carry out those directives. A secret Austin had realized and then told me, then Neve. That was as far as the information had gone. We didn't want Tristan implicated in Nelson's affairs.
I can see you grimacing out of the corner of my eye.
Dang it! We hadn't told him that we knew. Cat was out of the bag on that one. I tried even harder for a straight face.
Yes, dirty business that. But great for us. If the cairn was financially healthy, most people would ignore the transgressions so long as they didn't happen again. But with the cairn struggling, well.
She lifted her penciled eyebrows, her eyes glittering.
There is unrest, a lot of unrest. Nelson is holding it together. He's charming and good at public speaking, but only by a thread. He's sitting atop a house of cards. All that's needed is a stiff breeze and it'll topple over. And that breeze would want to come quickly because he's already acquired two new production cairns that he's saying will more than make up the difference.
Tristan gracefully sat on the couch facing Patty. She'd launched into her chat so quickly and with such gusto that neither of us had thought to break the string of words by sitting. She hadn't seemed to mind or maybe even notice. I took my seat next to Tristan as Mr. Tom re-entered the room.
We could destroy their operating production cairns.
Mr. Tom set down the mugs.
There you are.
Maybe just the one. A larger one. We'd reduce their income that much more and squeeze the cairn. The desire for new leadership, leadership that might better protect them, would increase. It would prompt Nelson's critics to get even louder.
I know which one to hit. If we do a thorough job, it'd take years to rebuild. It would also show our battle prowess.
No. I tried to keep the distasteful expression from my face. I will not make people suffer for my own gain. Besides, there's no guarantee a new leader would be any more interested in joining our convocation. There has to be another way to show our power. Something to make the people in that cairn sit up and take notice. To want change. Tristan was looking at me steadily now. No expression showed on his face or through his body. He'd gotten too good at that shifter body language training.
Yes.
Patty tapped her chin and looked up at Mr. Tom, who was still standing there.
Did you need something, Mr. Tom?
If I did, I don't imagine you'd stay quiet long enough to hear it. Miss, did you need anything else? Earplugs, maybe? A timer?
No, thank you, Mr. Tom. That's great. I smiled at him. He spun on his heel and left the room.
Let's table Gimerel for now.
Tristan was still looking at me. I was about to ask him what, but Patty was away again.
Now, how about this? Remember that little spot of trouble Wither got into? The surrogate for his heir that his mate didn't know about? His mistress, in other words. He'd promised that poor woman the world, thinking his mate would die from her sickness. Well, the baby was born, and the mate didn't die.
Nickin Cairn, I remember. I'd sent word asking that the mistress be sent to my territory. We would look after her so she didn't have an accident. Gimerel wasn't the only cairn that made people disappear. So far, we'd gotten no reply. It was time to force the issue. I'd asked Patty to get more information before we created a plan.
Well, the young woman's second cousin got wind of all this. He's a guardian in a cairn in the Rocky Mountains. He'd been angling to take the cairn over and make something of it, but decided instead to travel to Nickin and protect his family's honor.
He saw an opportunity.
He did indeed. He called down Wither, talked about the failing finances and the instability of the cairn, not to mention the lack of an heir, all while demanding justice. He demanded something be done for the poor woman. Well, Wither's mate was appalled, appalled. Out came his stories of how horrible Wither had been to her, yelling at her about not being able to produce an heir, and all sorts of filthy things. Nail in the coffin.
She saw the writing on the wall. She knew Wither's time was over. If she helped facilitate the new leader, he'd be inclined to look after her.
Exactly that!
Patty beamed at him.
Only 15 years in a cairn and you're well-versed in all the politics. Well, with her supporting the new guy and Wither having plenty of naysayers before even knowing about the mistress, and then the mistress, well, he was basically flung out, exiled. The new guy tried to offer him a place, as is decent, but the people of the cairn would not hear of it.
That's pretty common with a downfall like that. He'll find a cairn to take him in. He has his riches to offer, not to mention experience. Someone will be glad of his company.
Not that he deserves it. Tristan's head snapped my way. This time, confusion poked through his expression. This gargoyle just didn't get me.
Yes. So, that is Wither off his stoop. And do you know what else?
She pursed her lips and lifted her eyebrows before springing up and walking around the couch. Tristan checked his watch, a Cartier tank must, with its iconic rectangular shape and minimalist aesthetic. He was going for refined simplicity without sacrificing style, a good choice for an everyday watch. I knew way too much about watches now, but I didn't like what the mages had chosen for me in L.A., a pocket watch. Their pick just didn't seem like me. Neither did that ridiculous dress and those stupid gloves. They had a vision for what I should be in their world, but I wasn't a part of that world. I wasn't a mage, just like I wasn't a shifter. I was even having a hard time fitting in with the gargoyles, which I was supposed to be. If I were forced to stand apart, I'd do it my way. I'd choose my own dress code. I'd choose my own watch. And now that I'd learned mages were starting to care about cars, I'd choose my own transportation, too. This new life was supposed to be about my fresh start, and I wouldn't trade that because extreme weirdness creeped mages out. Honestly, I could weird in my sleep. My crew greatly helped with that. I didn't need a stupid dress to prove it. Patty held up a large box with a reinforced bottom and corners. She wove around the furniture to deposit it on the coffee table. Her expression was delighted and expectant.
A connection request!
She bounced up and down. Tristan sat forward, bracing his elbows on his knees.
That's good news.
That is very good news. I've looked into him. Top guardian in his care, of course, but also noted to be kind and generous. He worked up to lead Enforcer quickly and protected the cairn against several raids. Now, open it up. Let's see if he has good taste.
The lid of the box came away to reveal a heavily wrapped object inside. Tristan stood to help as Patty pulled out an envelope, handing it over with barely contained excitement. I opened it.
Dear Miss Ironheart, my name is Evan, the new leader of the Nicken Cairn. I believe you met my predecessor, Wither. I wanted to personally thank you for bringing to light the treatment of my cousin. More importantly, I wanted to express my utmost gratitude for trying to help her in her time of need. She informed me that several other people inside the cairn knew about her situation, but no one raised the red flag or tried to step in. You alone did that, even though it would hurt your standing with this cairn and within the community to do so. I've seen all of your correspondence, including your most recent threat. If not for you, I might not have had the courage to take on someone of Wither's stature. My cousin and I owe you a debt of gratitude. Please accept this formal connection request as the gift I mean it to be. It is from a newly established production cairn we have recently acquired. Their work speaks for itself. I asked them to create something fit for a female gargoyle. I think it's their best work yet. Warm regards, Evan Smithinson, controller for Nicken Cairn.
That's sweet. Patty reached for the letter. I gave it to her before standing to see the wrapped gift that Tristan had taken from the box and set on its own. I pulled the wrapping away, then sucked in a breath.
Oh, it's beautiful.
The object was a stunning, handcrafted glass sculpture, shaped like a large bowl, but with parts of the sides pulled up artistically. The form was dynamic and fluid, with a wavy shape that gave it a sense of movement. The glass itself showed multicolored, vibrant swirls with hues of amber, gold, purple, pink, and blue. It created a captivating, iridescent effect when it caught the light. It was delicate yet bold, stunning and sophisticated, with an almost luminous quality that did remind me of my gargoyle form. I didn't care what Naomi said. This was absolutely going to be shown off in Ivy House.
Very classy. If nothing else, we'll want to establish trade with them. And there's another envelope.
He pointed to a plain white envelope beside the box.
It was at the bottom of the package.
Patty scooped it up and looked at the front.
Not addressed to Jesse.
She started to open it. Finders keepers, apparently. Tristan glanced over the letter from Evan.
He's certainly new to the post. This letter is too ass-kissy for a cairn leader of Wither's stature, but it seems genuine. He's going about this the right way, and not just because Jesse will respond well to his touching sentiments. I wonder if he knew that, or if his personality will match up well with hers.
Patty held up what looked like documents with an "I told you so" expression. Tristan took them without a word. What is that? I leaned over his arm to look. He didn't move away, which meant he was thinking like a gargoyle right now, not a shifter.
He's rescinding all the grievances that Wither filed against you. That's his way of saying he wants to start fresh.
He surely knows all he can about Jesse.
Patty busied herself with cleaning up the box and packaging.
And he might have gone with a touching angle, as you said, because of that. But his letter was genuine, you can tell. He wants to thank her, he wants to meet her, and he'll have an open mind about her and the things she has to say.
I agree. His newness will work for us. He won't be as inclined to dig in his heels. He also has a grace period within his new post. His status will be frozen for a time so that he can make adjustments and settle in. It would be best to meet him within that window. That way, he won't feel so much pressure. He could ally with us on a temporary basis to see how it benefits him without fear that it'll tank his status.
How much time do we have?
A couple of months. It'll make things tough because of the shifter situation, but getting another big cairn to ally with us would be a huge boost to your status. He must know that Gerard and Cavala Cairn joined with us, and that they participated in a battle that the whole community is intrigued about. We are a battle species, after all, and they all want a piece of the action. But the politics involved are scaring away most of the smaller cairns. Gimeral is obviously still against us. Solgid has gone silent about it, but they haven't pulled their grievances against you. That's them saying they'll side with Gimeral for now. If we can get Nikan and get Gimeral out of the way, then we could turn the tide.
And if we can turn the tide, we can open up trading with all of them. Our production cairns were producing at incredible rates, thanks to the money Austin and Ivy House jointly put into them, working out of warehouses and anywhere else we could put them. We had storage facilities filled with top-quality products and storefronts going up within the territory and online. Once sales from that came in, we would expand. Setting up trade with the other cairns wasn't our top priority. We were eager to tap into the Dick and Jane markets, which encompassed mages and shifters and anyone with a foot in the mundane world. But eventually, we wanted to bring the cairns into the 21st century with us. We'd first establish trade with them, and either they would sell to Dicks and Janes, or we'd treat them as wholesalers and resell their items accordingly. We'd all profit, and everyone would benefit. When Austin did something, he didn't do it by halves. The sky was the limit. Fuck, I loved that man. The Alpha Network were idiots if they didn't see his incredible value. Okay, I stood, ready for the next thing. Tristan checked his watch as he stood with me. Let's send a thank you note for the gift. Let's not call it a connection request. Is that possible? Tristan and Patty both looked at me in confusion. We don't have time to wait for them to come here, and we certainly don't have time to entertain them. We need to get on the road. I don't want to advertise the fact that we'll be gone, though, or they might send someone to attack us, or the mages might, or who knows anymore. So, let's thank them and send a connection request of our own. Something... No, I should not be the one picking that out. Damn it, I really need Sebastian. He's perfect at picking out gifts. I looked around for the encrypted phone as though it followed me from room to room. Tristan, make a note, in the diary, I guess, to send Sebastian a message. We'll ask them to look into this new dude and come up with something he'll love. Something that will fit his new post within the cairn. Something thoughtful, but like, chic? Yeah, I don't know. I'm not good at this stuff.
I can ask.
I knew what he was hinting at. Most of my messages went unanswered. Almost all, as a matter of fact. It was like speaking into the void. I still tried occasionally, hoping to remind Sebastian and Nessa that we were here for them, and there was no reason to brave the darkness alone. But I didn't think I was getting through. I nodded and thanked Patty for her good work before I exited the room, Tristan following me.
Look at that. A hair early. You don't need a schedule keeper at all.
That's only because you scared Edgar away. Otherwise, he'd be waiting at the front door for me. I do need to go over the latest flowers, though I can't fathom why he keeps creating different ones. There's hardly a difference between versions X and 8, or whatever we're up to. We stopped at Mimi's desk at the back of the house. Only blood-related family were allowed to call Naomi the nickname. I was given a special privilege. Noticing my presence, she glanced up from a paper she'd been studying. We got a gift from a cairn. It's a lovely blown glass bowl. I left it in the front sitting room, but I'd like to put it on display somewhere. It's really pretty. She studied me for a brief moment before nodding and turning back to her work. She wasn't one for chit-chat. Outside the window, fire seared the grounds way out in the wood, hot and spreading fast. Syrah is gonna be late to practice.
Have you been able to find Nessa and Sebastian?
Tristan and I had grabbed Moomoo's, changed into them, and now headed out the back door.
No. Nessa is better at the tech side of things than we are. More experienced. She's way ahead of us.
Even with that computer guy in town?
Yes. He was plenty good for the gargoyles, but he's not even remotely good enough for the more powerful mages. He doesn't hold a candle to Momar's setup.
I blew out a breath as we walked through the flowers. Edgar was there tending them. When he saw us, he sank into a crouch, lowering his head as though that would render him invisible when the flowers only reached his shins. I pretended not to see him. I'd make sure to meet with him sometime today. Other than that, I just wasn't able to cope with his oddity. The fire in the woods continued to spread.
You do have a handle on that, yes?
Mind your business, and I will mind mine. That mage needs to help you with magic. Keep your focus where it will do the most good.
Gracious, she was surly today.
You're barely staying alive through all your skirmishes.
And she must have heard my thought. Sometimes I broadcast them.
You can read spells out of a book, but Sebastian could make them better. He could find the best ones to focus on. He's a genius with magic. You need him. Find him, kidnap him, and chain him in the crystal room. If he won't help you of his own free will, he will need other motivations, like starvation.
Good lord.
What?
Ivy House. She's cutthroat.
One of us has to be.
That other hacker guy, the one who is in Mimi's pile?
Yes.
Did you look at his resume and rap sheet?
Yes.
Someone put that sheet together, but no one has approached me about it. You seemed interested in it, so it isn't you recommending the person, and it wasn't Austin. That leaves Neve or one of the mages.
One of the mages?
He frowned at me, genuinely surprised. That meant it was Neve, then.
I didn't know if they might have sent the recommendation to help us out.
I'd hoped they had, and that they were still on our team, however distantly. I didn't like hearing that Sebastian and Nessa were trying to set us up or frame us, pushing us toward danger without an explanation. We needed a conversation. I needed to be in on this leg of the journey, or I needed to pull away. I couldn't live in the dark, not knowing if they planned to betray us, if they thought that betrayal was necessary, like at that mage dinner in L.A. Like with those deaths. I hated even thinking about it.
Anyway, that guy is obviously good, but not so good that he didn't get caught.
It looked like he got caught when he was younger. Went to juvenile hall. He's 36 now and hasn't stopped stealing, but he hasn't gotten caught since.
I paused to face him. There's a warrant out for his arrest. He grabbed my arm and tugged to keep me moving.
Exactly. Which proves he's evaded the law.
But, like, he's wanted by the cops. He steals. We can't hire a person like that. Tristan didn't reply for a moment.
How do you know it was me who disappeared people for Nelson? Did Alpha Steel figure it out? Or do you believe the rumors Nelson is spreading about me?
Austin told me. I haven't heard any rumors. That's Patty's department, and she hasn't said anything.
You never mentioned knowing.
I shrugged. Why would I?
Because I killed people and buried them in an unmarked grave. That's alarming behavior.
I grimaced this time. I did those things too. It was in self-defense, but still.
You're in a precarious position with your past. Nelson is an ass, and you're not worried about taking the moral high ground.
I figured you didn't much care, and given Neve would do worse.
I rolled my eyes.
Yeah, fine. I see the absurdity in my argument about stealing. It's just that the hacker's a dick. They have different rules. Their society isn't loose about stuff like that. He knew it was wrong, and he stole from people anyway.
Firstly, you're back to thinking like a Jane. In our world, his transgressions are so incredibly mild that they aren't worth thinking about. Stealing? Gargoyles steal all the time and destroy production cairns so they can get ahead. We have a whole set of rules that make stealing and destroying okay. Shifters are saints where that stuff is concerned, but then they'll kill you if you flirt with their woman. That's extreme behavior in a different way.
We pushed through the trees as the fire raged on. I wasn't sure if Ivy House was intentionally trying to make me sweat, or if Syra was having an effect on those gnome nests. I hoped it was the latter, even though currently it was the former. My muumuu was uncomfortably damp.
Second, he steals from large corporations with insurance, the kind of conglomerations that come by their money on the backs of their underpaid workers. And then he distributes more than half of those funds to charities and people in need. Sure, he's getting rich as well, but he's taking all the risk and only hurting organizations. He isn't hurting mom and pop trying to make a living. Even in the dick world, that doesn't seem so bad.
No, it didn't. It's a big salary. It was my last holdout.
500 grand a year is definitely a lot of money. We'd also have to harbor a fugitive, though I'm assuming we can alter his identity and make him disappear. Not like Nelson would, but the guy needs to disappear from the Dick and Jane world, you know? Just like change his record so the cops can't trace him, I mean.
I'd never heard him stammer like that. Maybe he hadn't been so morally ambiguous about the stuff he'd done. Which made me hate Nelson even more.
I want to rub Nelson's face in it. I pulled off the muumuu. Make an utter fool of him. I want him to regret how he treated me and how he's currently treating you. With the rumors, I mean. I want to shut him up. If he's good for that cairn and the people he rules, fine. But I want to knock him down several pegs and then taunt him. I don't know, give him a smug look or something.
I hear you. I'll figure it out. And about the salary. I mean, Jesse, you have a closet full of gold bars and an attic full of precious gems so big, they should probably be in a museum or something. Assuming they weren't stolen and, well, who knows with this house?
He bent to be on my eye level, his gaze solemn.
How much is too much when someone can help us save our friends from themselves?
He was right. I'd pay anything to drag Nessa and Sebastian off the dark road they seemed to be traveling. The two thought they were an island, but they weren't. Not anymore. Sooner or later, Momar was going to figure out they were the ones helping me. If he was good enough to plan that incredible attack on Kingsley, one we'd almost succumb to, then he'd figure out my secret partner. Maybe he already had, and was looking for Nessa and Sebastian now. I didn't need to pull away from them, but rather to find them and force them to see reason.
Told you so.
I said see reason, not chain them up and starve them until they help me.
I fail to see the difference.
The fire extinguished. I rolled my eyes and resumed my focus on Tristan.
Tell Neve to invite her hacker in. I want to sit down with him before I invite him into our world. If he's safe, then we can create some bonus-based incentives to ensure we get the best work out of him. We need to bring our people home. I shifted and took to the sky. Probably a little late, but nearly on time, probably. Crap, I was starting to sound like Edgar.
Tristan cut through the air on autopilot, his interactions with Jesse swirling within his mind. It was no surprise to anyone that he wasn't filling Nathaniel's role. Everyone thought he was too self-centered, too headstrong, and too used to doing things his own way to be the wingman Jesse desperately needed. But he wanted to surprise them, damn it. He wanted people here to know that he was more than what he seemed, much more. He also wanted to repay Jesse's faith in him by being her shield, being her power and endurance when she needed it. He didn't want to shine. He wanted to help her shine. And he didn't freaking know how. At every turn, she surprised him. She went left when he assumed she'd go right. She balked when he talked about financially hurting a cairn. but then wanted the leader tossed out on his ass. She was fine with him killing people because his leader told him to, but not okay with a guy stealing. It didn't make any sense. What did make sense was how he felt when he'd stepped in to help her earlier that morning. Tristan had heard the voices when he was walking down the hall and realized what was going on pretty quickly. But it wasn't until he noticed Jesse's tightened frame that he'd intervened without thinking. Sending Ivy House people on their way was child's play. Dealing with guardians had been so much harder. His goal had been to afford Jesse some breathing room. He hadn't expected to be handed control of her schedule, and certainly not her professional well-being. Was Tristan now Jesse's work-life Mr. Tom? Was this the point at which he needed to randomly create a new name for himself? Call him Weatherby. Mr. Weatherby, if you please. It did have a certain ring to it. Before now, he'd resigned himself to failure. He devoted hours to watching her, tailing her, analyzing her thought processes, to no avail. Delaying finding her a solid wingman was putting her in danger. He already had 5 guardians picked out that might do a better job. They weren't as fast or strong as some of the others, but they anticipated her better than the rest, better than he did. But interceding today had felt different, more his speed, and now he understood why. Nathaniel had been great at observation, holding back until the moment Jesse faltered. Only then would he step in. But Tristan didn't work like that. He didn't wait for things to happen. He made them happen. He liked control. He liked to orchestrate what went on around him. And that failing, he thought on the go. He couldn't do things Nathaniel's way, and it had been stupid of him to try. Then there were Jesse's motivations. You don't like being the bad guy.
I really don't. I've gotten better, but...
He watched the ethereal female gargoyle dive, putting herself in the way of a guardian as though he were an attacking mage. She was ready to take a blast to protect her own. And while that would have been a good move if her opponent had been a mage, it wasn't smart with a guardian. Not without backup. She was fighting as if she was solo. Probably because she was used to being the only one doing magic. Even with Sebastian, she'd had to play defense when he attacked. She had to protect her people. Hundreds of dots connected in a flash, and Tristan felt like he'd been blinded. Jesse was a caretaker by nature. She had been in her Jane life, and then she came here and was handed the house and a staff, and then an army. Her duty was to take care of them all. More than that, though, she was a female gargoyle, a battle species, yes, but not like him, not like the other guardians, not even like the Garhets. She didn't rush into battle, club people over the head, and shout her victory. Instead, she united her people, connected them, and made it her duty to protect them. That was why she'd sacrificed herself at Kingsley's, and why she hadn't taken the honor for doing so. She hadn't viewed her actions as heroic, but as a necessity, and after, as a failure. She was supposed to protect her people, and one of hers, someone dear to her heart, had died. Why hadn't he thought of that before? And their differences in battle tactics? Simple. Jesse didn't know what the hell she was doing. He'd trained all his guardians, even ones who'd come to him with impeccable previous instruction. They'd had to learn how to work with his setup. He hadn't trained her, though. Instead, he'd followed her lead, not sure how the magical aspect of things worked. Now that he did know, he saw the truth. She had virtually no experience in aerial combat. She was the newest among them, lacking the basics and relying solely on survival instincts. She needed structure. It hadn't been lost on Tristan that Nathaniel had gotten to see her in her flying infancy. He'd helped shape her reactions, and Sebastian had trained her how to counter mage attacks. They'd worked together seamlessly, having forged that connection in the same way. Hopefully, as Tristan refined Jesse's training, he could gain the insight that had made Nathaniel so effective. Maybe down the road, Tristan could honor Nathaniel's memory by continuing his outstanding teamwork. Dare to dream. He'd give himself one more month. One month to do things his way. He'd confront problems with her and Ivy House in the same way he'd confronted problems in his former cairn. At the end of that month, if he wasn't a hell of a lot closer to being what she needed, he'd start trying out other guardians. He had to figure this out, not just for her, but also because he really didn't need Neve heckling him with an I told you so.